where did the deep woundings that I've had in my life, where did they come from? Most of us live with some version of one of these in our ear or in our head in life, and they trip us up. Things like, I'm not good enough, I don't have what it takes, I'm not man enough, I'm defective, I'm broken, I'm bad, I'm unlovable, you know, some version of that. And I don't think God created us with that in us. It's something in our life kind of brings that to light. It may be apparent unintentionally. It may have been horrible abuse. You know, it may have been kids who ganged up on you, or an older child, or someone else. And to really look at that with God and wrestle with God around that, so that you can walk out of there with a different message in your head going forward. A message that we believe comes from God.
Welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, where men rediscover courageous masculinity. Pull up a chair as we gain strength from the stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. These men have discovered that in a world of superficiality and isolation, we need authentic brotherhood to gain strength for the battles we face every day. Brought to you by the ministry of CLC, which challenges men to an uncommon pursuit of Christ. Welcome to Empowered Manhood. Welcome back to the Empowered Manhood Podcast. My name is Mike Hatch, and I am here, as usual, with Chris Bollinger. Chris, how are you today, buddy?
Hey, Mike. I'm doing well on this rainy day here in Southwest Florida.
I know. I was kind of joking about that earlier. I feel good about that because I've got sun up here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so our weather actually competes with your weather in Florida. Yeah, I'll take it. Although we have frost and it's, you know, 30 degrees.
Yeah, there is that.
It doesn't matter. In Pittsburgh, if it's sunny.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
That's get the shorts key. On.
That's right. So, hey, I am so excited for our show today. We have with us the president of the Crucible Project. His name is Roy Wooten. And Roy, want to welcome you to the Empowered Manhood Podcast. Thanks for being on with us.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here, Mike and Chris.
Yeah. Roy is in Houston, Texas. And that's where he
there's
resides.
Rarely frost on the ground. So.
That's right.
Occasionally, but.
That's right. And let me just start, first of all, by just kind of sharing very briefly, Roy, because I'm excited about what you're going to share about what's going on in the ministry of the Crucible Project with men all over the country. And I think, as you and I have talked before, Roy, I think there's just some real synergy and potential between, you know, with CLC and Crucible. We have the same heart for discipleship. And which is one of the reasons why I really wanted to have you on, highlight your ministry. But I personally have been on a Crucible weekend, and it was probably 13, 15 years ago, I think now. Is that right? No, it was less than, it was more like 10 years ago. But really had a profound impact on my life. And it was during a time where I was transitioning from my time on staff with Young Life to being a pastor at a church out here, and had some things that were really kind of holding me up in terms of my own spiritual growth and what I felt would hinder me in my new role, and went on the weekend based on a friend's recommendation, and it absolutely blew me away. I was in the Air Force before in the military. And so the only way I can equate it is it was like a basic training kind of experience for men, but from a spiritual perspective. And I absolutely loved it. I mean, it really gave me an opportunity to wrestle with God, take a good hard look at myself, really meet some of those demons that were dogging me head on. It was life-changing. It really was. And so I've always felt an affinity for the Crucible Project. and for your ministry. And so, and then since coming on staff with CLC, Roy, you and I have gotten to be reacquainted. Well, not reacquainted, acquainted, because I hadn't met you before. So we got to meet each other. And man, I love your heart. I love your countenance. You just have, you can tell that you have done the deep soul work, that it is ongoing in your life, that you are desperately dependent on the gospel on a regular basis, walking in the light, as we talk about here on our podcast, as an empowered man, if you will. So Roy, I would love for you to start out by sharing, first of all, just your journey of faith, and tell us your story. We call in CLC, we call it your fence post story.
Yeah. So thanks so much. I grew up out in Odessa, Texas. That was a desert. And my dad was an oil rig man, what you call a roughneck. And we grew up in a trailer park. And me and my younger brother, and early on in my life, my mom had a psychiatric break. Mm-hmm. And when she would get psychotic, it would be dangerous in our home. Mm-hmm. And so she would go away for a while. In the 70s, mental health was different than it is today. They don't have all of the tools that they have today. And so we would get farmed out to other folks. And one of those folks molested me while he cared for me for the short period, few months that my mom was in a psych hospital. Wow. And I took all that energy and put it into my sport. And in Odessa, if you have any athletic ability, you play football. So I don't know if you've heard of Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
I'm one of the boys from Odessa Permian football team, Friday Night Lights.
Wow.
So, and then I went off to Abilene Christian. My faith journey also includes mom and dad mostly had me in church every Sunday. So the faith was strong, even in the challenges of the home. And I was convicted and baptized and became a Christian at 10 years old. And I I shared the gospel and baptized the first person I ever shared the gospel with when I was 12.
Oh my gosh.
And I just continued that my whole life. So I would take people's heads off on Friday night, and then I'd I'd be talking faith with them other times. So I went off to Abilene Christian to be a pastor, and somewhere in there got this message that you don't have to be the pastor if you're called into ministry. Mm-hmm. And moved into counseling and got my master's and did a couple of years at a psych hospital to get my license. And the rest of my years I've been leading ministries. And I'd done a lot of counseling in my early, early adulthood around the challenges of my childhood and the challenges of that abuse that happened, and I thought I had it all dealt with, and I would jump onto anything that was Christian men's things, read every book, trying to figure out life for myself. There seemed to be some things within me that were very challenging, and the man I wanted to be was different than the man that I was, and I would find myself doing things that were sometimes that I would think that is not who I am. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I also found myself being very generous and big-hearted and loving and serving so many people. And yet my wife would say or do something or not do something, a parent would, or someone that was really important to me. And I would bark at them. Like it would be like this tiger that came out and, really go after them and would hurt them. And that's not who I was or who I wanted to be. And other people could see it better than I could. Like I knew some challenges within me, but other people could see it better than I could. And I went through, I was invited by my brother-in-law to go through a Crucible Project weekend. And I discovered that all the work that I thought I had done and I kind of buttoned everything up and it's over, right, and done with, wasn't. I had an opportunity to really like take a deep look at who I was and how I was and where those things might be and what was driving me, mm-hmm. And get underneath those. And as you mentioned, wrestle with God around those things, you know.
Yeah.
One of the amazing things out of my weekend was I had believed for a long time that I was going to heaven, that I had an eternal home with Jesus, that I was saved, that I was forgiven. And what I knew didn't fit how I felt. Mm-hmm. So how I felt was I am no good to ministry. I'm not good enough. I'm not valuable enough. And the big one for me was I am really an unlovable soul.
Mm.
Yep.
And after the weekend, I left there feeling like I actually was loved and delighted in by God. And I, you know, with all my learning, you know, from the neck up, I knew that, but the rest of my body and my heart never believed it. And it was so freeing. I started volunteering and, you know, some many, many years later, a service, they invited me to serve in this role, shepherding the ministry forward. So,
yeah, wow.
That's my story.
Man, you and I have spoken, I relate so much to your story. I've had very similar struggles growing up. I also was sexually abused by a babysitter for me. But man, do I identify with the separation between what I believe and what I feel. And I think that's something that men often, I think, miss out on, because we have a tendency to be so much in our heads, or, you know, we separate ourselves in some ways from our body. And I mean, that's one of the things that I think we, as I've worked with men, the struggle is often just to pull your feelings out of your heart, you know, and be able to express them. That's really hard for men because they can't even identify, okay, what I'm feeling is sadness or anger, or we can't even, because we've separated our bodies, but our bodies. And I love how you said it. You said, you didn't believe it. I think you even used the words, you didn't believe it in your body.
Yeah.
And I don't think we understand how our bodies both, they can hold on to trauma and the grief and things we've experienced. But when you tap into that, in some ways it can actually release you, you know. My point is, the body plays a huge role for men, and we dismiss that. So,
yeah. So we're told, you know, and I don't know if you were, but as a boy, I was told, don't you cry, I'll give you something to cry about. You know,
right.
The culture was that if you cry, you're weak. And if you're weak, you're not a man, or you're not truly a man. If you let anyone know that you have any fear, the other boys will pounce on us. Right. And, what do you see? You know, they call us names, and so it makes sense that we really disconnected our head from our heart. We did that to survive as boys, and you're right. When we experience trauma, and I would even push back if someone's like, "Well, I've never had any trauma in my life." When we experience wounds, even unintended wounds, We experience them through our senses, our you know, what we see, hear, taste, you know, in our body. We experience them in our body, and that's how they come back for us. They come back for us through our body. And so we might be walking through some area and we smell a smell, and all of a sudden we're reminded of something. It can be good memories, but also wounded moments in our growing up. And I have found that connecting men's heads and heart, connecting my head and heart, was such a gift. Connecting, and one of the things that's so different about Crucible is that we really focus on experiential processes, experiential exercises to also, so that we can love God fully with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, so that our body is a part of who we are. And so we connect that with the head and heart in the different experiences. And God has just been using it mightily to bring healing and blessing and light into dark places. Mm. And how I felt, loved and freedom from things that have been tying them down. And it is that combination of things that I think makes some of the scriptures really come to life for me, like the things I don't want to do, Paul says. That's what I end up doing. Right. And the things I don't want to do, I don't do. And it's just a challenge because that is in all of us. That was in me early in my ministry, and it's a challenge with. And I thought that it was something out there. Somebody else or something else, we're really good at blaming or complaining. But in reality, whenever we really take a good look in the mirror, God's got gifts for us. We don't like what we see, but underneath that, if we really will look, we will find great answers. One of the other things I want to say about Crucible that's so powerful is this concept of living confessionally up to date with people. James 5 says, confess your sins one to another for healing. We confess to God for forgiveness, and we confess to each other because there's something that's healing in that. And confess not only about sin, but to really live authentically, not hiding, no masks, not living in a persona with other men is I think very damaging to Satan's cause. We are most easily picked off in isolation.
Mm. Yep.
And that's so we on our weekends we create the space that creates safety so I can talk about the sins that I'm done or doing or the sins that have been done to me or things that aren't even sin that are just in the way of me and my relationship with God or my relationship with other loved ones.
Yeah.
And God's using it powerfully to remove those barriers.
Mike, you and Roy are both obviously very familiar with the Crucible Project weekend. I am not. So I'm hearing a lot of really interesting things here. Can you give me a flavor for what happens on a weekend? What type of event is this? What would happen? What would I do if I went? And, I've heard some of the results that could happen, but I'm just having trouble getting a grasp of what actually happens on a weekend.
Yeah. So what happens on a weekend is that you will be invited to really look deeply at yourself. It's amazing. On Friday night, we're not about connecting you with other men, we're about connecting you with you and really helping you look deeply at how you're doing life, how that's working out for you, what's really driving underneath everything.
Right.
And where that might have come from, and Saturday, there's a great opportunity to connect your head and heart in the morning, and then an opportunity to really pinpoint where did the deep woundings that I've had in my life, where did they come from? Most of us live with some version of one of these in our ear or in our head in life, and they trip us up. Things like, I'm not good enough. I don't have what it takes. I'm not man enough. I'm defective. I'm broken. I'm bad. I'm unlovable. Some version of that. And I don't think God created us with that in us. Something in our life kind of brings that to light. It may be apparent unintentionally. It may have been horrible abuse. It may have been kids who ganged up on you, or an older child, or someone else. And to really look at that with God and wrestle with God around that, so that you can walk out of there with a different message in your head going forward, a message that we believe comes from God. So Jacob's story is a good example of this, I think. Jacob connived the birthright out of his brother and a blessing out of his father. And then he ran from the situation and started a new life and created a family and working in his father-in-law's business. And then there was something about the way that he was cooking the books with the flock and all. And his brother-in-law's found out. And they went and told his Laban, and he runs again. And he runs, and he takes all his assets, all his business assets, all of his family, and he hikes, headed back home. And he hears that Esau, his brother that he had stolen from, finds out he's coming, and he's headed toward him with 600 men. Not a party, you know.
Right.
Because Esau told him, if I ever see you again, I'm going to kill you. And so here he is, and he's alone at the brook of the Jabbok, and that's where God wrestles with him. It says a man wrestled with him all night. Later we find out it was God in the story, and God asks him, who are you? And he admits, I'm Jacob. I am a conniver, a deceiver, a usurper. That's who I am. I'm caught between things from way back in my past and things most currently in the mess in my life. And he wrestles with God about that, and God blesses him. He doesn't stop wrestling until he gets the blessing. And he leaves there with a new identity. And he walks in such a way, they say, you know, his hip was rendered. You know, he walks in such a way that, you know, the Jewish people still talk about him and his story. I mean, the country that represents the Jewish nation is named after him, Israel. Mm-hmm. And Jacob doesn't kill him. Jacob blesses him and welcomes him. There was something that happened that night that was so powerful in him getting real with God about who he was. So that's a good analogy for the weekend and specifically the wrestling with God. And then on Sunday, we help get you ready to go back. You know, it's rare that a man actually receives a blessing from another man. We give opportunities for that. And the real connection and the brotherhood deepens there and then continues in follow-up groups or coaching.
Hey guys, this is Mike Hatch. Thank you so much for listening to Empowered Manhood. And of course, this is brought to you by CLC, Christ-Led Communities, where we help busy pastors multiply their impact by engaging the men in their church through relational discipleship. We challenge men to an uncommon pursuit of Christ, and we equip men to be leaders based on a growing, vibrant relationship with Jesus and a dedication to sound biblical principles. If you would like to learn more about CLC, you can visit our website at clchq.org. That's clchq.org. Or you can also email me at mhatch@clchq.org. Again, that's mhatch@clchq.org. All right, now let's get back to the interview. And I don't know, and Roy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but just to let Chris know this too, there is some specific certain amount of veilness, if that's the way to say it, about some of the specifics of the weekend intentionally, because it is pretty critical that as men that we are not in control. And so when you enter the weekend, usually like I know for me, and we used to do this in Young Life too, actually, when I was on staff in Young Life, we'd take kids to camp and they'd want to know what were we doing, the specifics, what time are we going to be where, blah, blah, blah. And we would intentionally say, I'm not telling you, you need to let go and just trust right now. And in a similar way, this weekend, when you enter in, it's intentional to kind of be vague about what the specifics look like or the schedule looks like so that you have a real authentic experience and interaction with the Lord. Would that be fair to say, Roy?
That's correct. And there are some surprises that if I tell you, it will just be less impactful for you.
Yeah. Don't tell me.
But I'll tell you what you won't find is, you know, kumbaya kind of experience.
Right.
It is so unique. It's so powerful. You know, over 5,600 people have been through our weekend, and It's so unique. It's so powerful that they go and tell everyone about it. And, and it just, you know, continues to grow. So
this sounds great. And I know that I would benefit hugely from it, but I think in some ways it may be a little daunting for men, you know, hey, you're going to go to this weekend, you're going to wrestle with God, you're going to wrestle with yourself, you're going to unearth stuff that you've been suppressing for a long time. So that's probably a bit of a challenge for a lot of guys to say, oh, I want to go. I mean, you know, they need to go, and ultimately they're going to want to go. But what brings a man to the point where he really wants to go to a Crucible Project weekend? He's reached the point where he's got to go.
Yeah. And the easiest answer is some kind of pain, you know, mm-hmm. That's usually, that's the easiest answer. So, you know, challenges in the relationship, a divorce or whatever, career coming to a sudden end. We've served many pastors and leaders of ministries who just about to blow it or just did, you know, and
burned out. Maybe they're burned out on their current life. They're done with their current life, maybe.
And being stuck, that's the other thing. So being stuck, like in between family cycle changes, you know, about to get to retirement, and you're wondering, what will my marriage look like after? What will I do? Because I've got my self-worth from, you know, how the company achieves, or what my bank account, how my bank account investments are growing. And there's got to be more to life than this. I went because my brother-in-law kept saying, Roy, it's unlike anything in men's ministry you've ever experienced, and you need to see it. And so I told you, I didn't think I needed to go, right? I didn't think I really needed to work on anything. And God blessed me with just like saying, look in the mirror here. And I'm so thankful that he did. Like, my wife and kids are thankful. I wish I could have gone in my 20s, you know, because it's impacted them in new and different ways. And it's opened my ministry up, where I was timid in ministry. And now I go, I hear God nudge, and I just go and do it. So it's brought me some freedom and courage that I didn't have before.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great way to explain what it did for me as I was making my transition from Young Life to being a pastor. Without a doubt, it gave me courage and confidence, not in myself, but in the Lord and his faithfulness to me. Which, going back to the Jacob story again, it's interesting. Unfortunately, many ministry leaders and pastors in our culture have in some ways misinterpreted that passage to be about more about Jacob than it is about God. And what I mean by that is they give more credit to Jacob than is due in some ways, in terms of persistence and not letting go of God and blah, blah, blah. And it actually takes the focus away from where it should be, which should be on God. Yeah. And for me, that's what happened on my weekend. It was like, it took, in a way, it took the focus off of me, and put it on God. And that's where I found my joy and my peace and my confidence, and was in him, not in anything I could do myself. That just, as you shared that story, I was thinking about that, and that connection with my own experience, Roy.
Yeah, exactly right. And you know, I if I mentioned that Crucible's producing this, I really think it's God using Crucible when a man is ready to do it really well. But for 15 years, we've been doing pretty much the same weekend. And for at least a dozen years, we've talked about if someone's not ready to go, but could they start this journey before they get to the weekend? And as the pandemic started, we decided that we would try to do something about that. And we created a suite of online services that support the beginning of this kind of work before you actually go through the weekend. And so, Chris, someone who's like, I don't know if it's really for me, you know, going, spending 3 days and, you know, investing in myself with some funds, our online digital suite, myjourney2.com, has an app that has pre-recorded sessions for different challenges that men face. It has a self-assessment that's rather deep, measures 8 different areas of your life that you can track your progress, and a way to do digital groups and such in there. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I think of it as an adjunct to what y'all are doing. It's an adjunct, and it's probably not for every one of you, but I love what you're doing in deepening spiritual formation and discipleship in a beautiful way. And helping men be real around all of that. It is beautiful what you're doing. And we might be of service to some of those men.
I definitely agree. There are certain men I think that would be ready to jump into that. Like you said, not everybody, but you, what I love about our two ministries is we provide, I think, what's desperately needed for men, in very unique ways, you know, that complement each other very well. Which kind of leads to my next question, actually. So from your perspective, Roy, if you were to think about kind of the landscape of masculinity today, men in our culture here in America, what do you think are one of the greatest challenges facing men today?
Yeah, so my mind goes first to distractibility. I think we're in a season of Satan using everything around us to distract us from our relationship with God and our relationship with our children and our spouse. It is so easy to get caught up in the political divisiveness or in this cause or that cause around me and lose sight of what's most important here while we're on this earth. And then, you know, devices are all over the place. And the more we spend on our phones or, you know, on devices, the more likely our attention span is getting smaller and smaller. And so when our wife does have something to share with us or another man just comes with us and he's in a dark place, we can't attend fully for long enough to hear and serve them. So I think distractibility is one of the big challenges of our day and time. And I would say second is a different isolation. There's this horrible thing about shame. You know, David experienced this. He had an affair. He covered it up. He committed adultery, covered it up with a murder, and then tried to keep it secret. And then Nathan came and busted him, you know, and caught him. And it was like he finally got real. And it was just this, there's this song, there's this release of, like, I felt but my bones were dry and my skin was burning like the summer sun. And, you know, you feel all the shame in our body and who we are. I think shame drives us into isolation because we think we're the only ones that have ever been through whatever it was, who feel the way that we are, or who are going through whatever we're going through. And Satan uses that mightily, that shame. And in their shame, we will do something that we really don't want to do. Like, deep in our heart, that's not the kind of person, that's not the man we want to be. We'll do that, and then we'll feel shame from it. And then we'll try harder, but the shame beckons because we don't share it with anyone else. And because we're isolated, we don't, it like beckons us back. And we get into the cycle of shame, try harder, do harder, you know, pray harder, and then fail, shame. And it's just this ongoing cycle. And the way to break out of it is, you know, the scripture says is to get real, confess to one another, like be in regular community so that I know I'm not the only one, so that we can help each other, so that we can move together. And so I think isolation is a big one. And we're just used to numbing out. We numb out as kids, with different things. We find the thing that helps us numb out so that we don't have to feel. And it's some form of hiding or some form of whatever. And I think that's a big thing that everything from drugs or alcohol or masturbation, people call it porn. I'm going to call it masturbation or other ways, or sexual acting out or whatever, other ways of not being present with who I am and my emotions. So I don't have to feel.
And real quick, as you were saying, that story about David and him being confronted by Nathaniel, I think that as you were talking about the beginning of the Crucible weekend, and you mentioned the fact that as you start out the weekend, it's more, you're more to yourself. You're with other guys, but you're more to yourself. I think for me, as I remember back to my experience, that provided my Nathaniel moment. Yeah. I had that experience, if you will, that you helped facilitate on the weekend of being confronted with the reality, the truth of my sin, okay, that I couldn't escape. But then also seeing that in the other guys there too, but then also then simultaneously kind of experiencing the love of God and the forgiveness and grace of God. That's what I love about the weekend, because as you come out of that, then you do begin to start experiencing fellowship with the other guys, but you've been through that, individual experience first, transformative Nathaniel confrontation, that as you do engage with other guys, it's at a level that it's at a deep level you've never experienced before, because now it comes from this security that you've just found in Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. And many men have shared things on the weekend that they've never shared with anyone ever in their life.
Right.
Because we create the safety if they want to. And no one's forced to do anything. It's really very permission based, but yeah, if they want to, and there's incredible grace. Like that's the healing that I'm not alone, and these other men are seeing me, this fear of if anyone ever really knew the truth about me, right? Mm-hmm. If anyone ever knew my worst moments, or what I think in my heart, then they would reject me. I would be outcast. I would be, kicked out of church. I would be whatever. I would lose all my friends and family. No one would love me, et cetera. And that's Satan's lie. That is a lie. And when we get real with each other, there is an incredible amount of grace that not only we know, but we feel.
Hey, Roy, I was taking a look before the podcast, just looking at the website, looking at the weekends that are coming up late this year, early next year. And one thing I noticed is that you have at least one for men who speak Spanish, which I found interesting. But can you talk? I know last year or the past 18 months have probably been really difficult because you've probably had to cancel weekends and people haven't wanted to go. But thinking about a couple of years before the pandemic started and what you're looking at in the maybe next 12 months, what are you seeing in terms of the men that are coming, the men that are being reached, and maybe the men who aren't coming? Can you give us an idea for some of the patterns of attendees and what you're hoping you'll see in the next year or two in terms of who comes?
Yeah. We had the year before the pandemic, close to 1,000 men come through our weekends. And our weekends were in Kenya and in South Africa and Australia and Mexico and all over the U.S. Last year was around 215 who participated in our weekend. So the pandemic did a number on us.
Right.
We're running about in volume, having about half the weekends that we had before the pandemic.
Okay.
And our total number of participants have been down. Mm-hmm. So instead of having a full weekend would be 39 participants, We will have somewhere around half or a little more than that.
Okay.
And I expect it's going to take some time for people to really feel safe. And there's been an economic challenge there. So,
right.
So it's going to take a little time for us to get back to the volume we were before. And I'm okay with that. God's got us doing some other things as well. And we'll go where he wants us. Even in this slow period, we launched weekends for the first time in Maryland, in Berthoun, Virginia, I think is where the retreat site was, and also in Minneapolis.
That's great.
Wow. What are you seeing in terms of the age of men who are coming? Are you seeing any changes in the types of men who are coming, or is it still pretty consistent with the way you'd seen in the past?
Yeah, I think it's consistent with the way it's been in the past.
Okay.
Probably fewer, I'm thinking through this now, probably fewer younger men. Like we would get some men in the early 20s, mm-hmm. and more of the 45 and older, 40 and older crowd right now. And maybe that's because that group is more open to getting out there during COVID. I don't know. And probably more financially secure. But
right.
Yeah.
Before we start recording, you talked about the pastors that have come through your program. And recently, actually, you recently just came off of a weekend with pastors. I'm just curious, could you give us some idea or perspective right now? Because I think you gave us some perspective before we started the call, and I think it could be valuable for other folks to hear, especially there could be pastors listening as well right now. What are you seeing in terms of what some pastors are dealing with right now, especially with regard to the pandemic?
Yeah, I think ministry has been difficult for pastors for a number of years. You know, more are leaving the pastorate than are coming into it. And the pandemic has really expedited it. The culture, the zeitgeist of America is divisive, and that has made its way into the church. There are other cultural things pushing against Christianity in general. It's probably less socially acceptable to claim Christianity in the public square than it ever has been in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And then there are just challenges with, do we close? Do we open? How do we open? And people on different, in different ways that they're viewing the pandemic, or what recommendations are from the government and different trust levels. And pastors have taken a beating through all of this. There is no answer that makes everyone happy in this time. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a very challenging time for them. And many have thought, has God removed my call in ministry? Or am I not God's man anymore? Or should I be doing, I did not sign up to lead in this kind of mess. You know, I signed up to evangelize the world, to help souls find salvation. And here I am, you know, with arguing over whether we're going to require masks or vaccinations or whatever. And it's messy. I think one of the most difficult things for pastors is when somebody has been in their home, and they've been in their home, and they've been, you know, they've married their people, they've been at the bedside, and they've buried them, and then they walk and they leave. And it may be because there's something fancy down the way that's brighter at the moment, but it may just be that they didn't like some minor decision that they disagree with. And then that's like the friendship is gone. It feels like abandonment. It almost feels like betrayal, the way that Judas betrayed Jesus. So these have been difficult times for pastors. And once a year in mid-August, and I don't know if it's on our site right now, but you could go there at thecrucibleproject.org and click the men's. We have a week midweek. We have a midweek weekend, if that makes sense. It's the same.
Right.
We're really targeting pastors so they could preach on Sunday, get on a plane, and get here Monday night and experience our weekend and be home by Wednesday evening. You know, we'll be done by 3 on Wednesday and leave. And usually who staffs that weekend and who participates on that weekend are pastors. So it's largely ministerial staff. And it's here in Houston, so it's easy to fly into, you know. And so, I think it's been very challenging. And I would encourage anyone listening to just go love on your pastor. You may not agree with everything that he's saying or doing or whatever, but he needs to know that even when you disagree, he's still your brother and you're still supporting him. It's been a really rough year. There are some church denominations that are really struggling to fill their pulpits.
Yeah, part of my job is traveling and meeting with pastors and churches. And I've seen that same thing. One of the interesting things is because I'm not a part of their congregation, because I've been a pastor before, there seems to be an openness to share some things that maybe, you know, they wouldn't otherwise share with someone even in their congregation. I was surprised by the vulnerability that I was able to receive from pastors and the struggles that they've been having. I didn't, for whatever reason, I don't know why, I didn't go into this role thinking that I was going to be, you know, ministering to pastors, but in some ways I actually have been. So I just say that to say what you're saying is correct. Pastors are struggling more so than ever before. And we do need to be praying for them and supporting them. So,
yeah. Thanks for being safe for them. You create safety for them, something about who you are. And I imagine part of the equation is they're just hurting, you know, they're in pain.
Yep. So,
and it's really difficult for pastors to have an outlet of where is a safe space, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, man, Roy, thank you so much. This has been an absolutely amazing conversation. Really appreciate your perspective. Appreciate what the Crucible Project is doing. So how would a guy, if he's interested in jumping in into a weekend, if someone wants to learn more about the Crucible Project, or maybe someone wants to connect with you or someone else there, how would they do so?
Yeah, they can find everything at thecrucibleproject.org. And there's a free giveaway on there in exchange for a name and phone and email address.
Ooh, okay.
We had 16 different Crucible men and women put together a devotional book called Faith Over Fear, Finding God in a Pandemic. And that's available in an ebook form if they want there. But there's different buttons for our different ministries and easy to get in touch with us through the contact form there. So I would be glad to visit with any man.
That's great. Man, thank you so much, Roy. So much.
Yeah, thanks,
appreciate
Roy.
You.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, bless you.